Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logie. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, yeah, so you're probably wondering, like, okay, well, where the hell were you two yesterday? I mean, not yesterday, but last week. Well, I got COVID again for the third time, and it really screwed up my throat. So I was constantly coughing and having to deal with all kinds of mucus and shit for a couple of days. Now, the good thing is, of course, I'm vaccinated, so compared to the first time I got COVID, the symptoms were actually fairly mild, but they were still enough that they kind of knocked me out of commission for a couple days. But my, you know, as you can clearly see, I'm better now. Everything's fine. So we kind of got a day or two to make up for. So as you can expect, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this week, which also includes last week. Amongst other things, we have the results of the runoff that we had down here in Georgia. We got the ongoing saga, or I guess you want to call it comedy of errors, that is Elon Musk and his ownership of Twitter. Peru is currently dealing with some serious government shit right now. And that's just like the tip of the iceberg of the stuff we got to talk about. But yeah, it's kind of a loaded, been kind of a loaded 2 weeks. So we kind of had to pare down some shit. So if we ended up missing anything, it wasn't that we weren't, you know, knowing about it. It's just, we kind of need to keep this under 2 hours.
I'll also put the last week's show notes with this week's.
Yeah.
So you can see anything we missed.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, to start us off, as always, Chris, start us off, because I know it's probably freezing as fuck over there.
It is 30 degrees right now.
Yeah.
It's been snowing throughout the day.
Yeah.
Here, though, luckily not too much. Specifically where I am at, we got like a dusting overnight.
Yeah.
But where I work, got like a good inch or two.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised by that. So, yeah, there you go. For the weather check. But things I've been watching, I got around to watching Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah. I've been wanting to watch that for a while. I've never gotten around to it.
Yeah, how is it? It is a fantastic movie.
I have been told so.
I would liken it to if The Matrix decided to get stupid.
Okay.
Because it is a very, very silly movie, and when they get the chance to do stupid things, they take it. Features Michelle Yeoh as this woman who is running a laundromat. I think she has one more business, I forget. But they, her husband, who is played by the actor that played Short Round back in the second Indiana Jones movie, who never really got many other jobs after that because of racism and all that shit.
Well, yeah, and also, let's be honest, he was pretty friggin' annoying in that movie. Not really his fault. He was a kid actor and everything, but
yeah. There's a lot of Asian actors who have had trouble getting jobs until fairly recently.
Oh,
so you've kind of given up on the idea of being an actor until, you know, somebody talked to him about this role and was like, no, we really want you here. And he does a really good job playing her husband. But you can tell that, like, she has stuff constantly on her mind. Her husband's trying to get her attention a lot of the time and fails to do so. And so, yeah, they, in this process, are kind of going to the IRS office because they're being audited, and they have to bring in, you know, all the receipts and all that kind of stuff to explain all the stuff that's going on. And that is played by, Jamie Lee Curtis is the, whole thing there. And, she is a great part of the whole movie. Because the the main conceit is that this is when she starts getting contacted by an alternate universe version of her husband, who lives in what they call the Alpha Universe, who is sort of the universe that figured out that there are many other universes out there, and that there is a means for like jacking into your other selves and gaining their abilities that they have. And you kind of learn that like these other universes are created essentially when you're coming to like a life decision and you make, you know, one decision and then there's another universe that where you made that other decision.
Yeah.
And so they kind of believe that this version of Michelle Yeoh, her character, is potentially the one to save everybody from this big bad evil that is destroying all these universes. Because she is apparently the least skilled version of herself in any universe. That this is like where she made all the wrong decisions, essentially. And so they start like teaching her, or not teaching, because essentially the way they use it is they have like two Bluetooth like headphones on her ears, and the whole mechanic is kind of that, oh, they find the universe where she can gain an ability from her person, and you have to like do something shocking to enable to, you to like pull in this information, this skills or whatever. But then you hit like a button on the Bluetooth headset thing. And she's like, oh, you know, break a finger or hurt yourself or do something, you know. They set up some of these because you start seeing objects around. You're like, that's a weird thing to have. That's there's probably going to see some use for that. They make use of that stuff pretty well. But yeah, you see her kind of naturally being able to kind of pull herself into these other universes, see what her life could have been if she had made other decisions, and kind of dealing with that as well as dealing with, you know, her life stuff and then how all this stuff plays out. It's kind of a very chaotic but contained kind of messiness as all this stuff is sort of thrust into her life and all that. It's really well done.
People the more I hear about this movie, the more I'm like, this needs to be like a game somehow. Like,
I don't know, but it does some really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely recommend people check it out.
Oh, I definitely want to, because I hear everything. The more I hear about this movie, I'm like, this is absolutely something I have to watch at least once.
Yeah, there's a lot of great action in it, a lot of great story stuff. You know, people who immigrated to America, and dealing with a kid that is not straight, and sort of how to talk about that to her father, and all that stuff. And you're seeing these characters who are presented one way, that when these multi-universe stuff shows up, they start being able to do other things in ways that are unique and interesting. And yeah, it's really fun. Definitely something people should check out if they had not done so yet. The other thing I checked out is on Netflix, Alice in Borderland. This is a Netflix series coming out of Japan. Where it features these three friends who are kind of, as you call them, like losers, essentially. The one is a big gamer and like doesn't want to get a job because that interferes with his ability to play, you know, multiplayer games or whatever. The other one works at a bar. Is like a guy that gets into fights and all that kind of stuff. And the other one was raised by really religious parents. Very much kind of sheltered and all that kind of stuff. So they're kind of hanging out, especially after one of them gets fired from their job. And they're kind of getting to a little bit of mischief as they're trying to have a fun day because they want to go to a bar and drink. And they're like, ah, there's nothing really open right now in the middle of the day. And so they kind of get into a little bit of mischief, run off to a bathroom nearby at the train station. And then all the lights go dark and they, you know, walk out and like, there's nobody here in this, you know, like that busy street in Akihabara, the crosswalk thing that goes like, I guess at least like five or six different ways the street goes, something like that. But they have to stop every so often to let, you know, dozens of people cross the street. They find themselves in this weird version of Tokyo that is empty, devoid of people. And find out, eventually find some people in that they run into this game area where they find out that, like, there's some weird society going on where they have to take on these games. If they can, you know, clear them, they gain, you know, X amount of days on their visa that lets them survive for, you know, so much longer. Otherwise, a big laser out of the sky shoots down and kills them. And so they're trying to, like, solve these games, survive them, and try to work towards maybe figure out, like, what the hell is going on in this world. How can they potentially get back as they run into other people and start learning more about what is going on here? And the season ends with them kind of figuring out a good chunk of it, but also setting up for the next season. I think it's supposed to be starting here in the next week or two. So that was one I was like, I'll check this out. It sounds a little bit like Squid Games, but I think it's pretty different. Whereas Squid Games, there was like, you know, X amount of people that were brought in to do this, you know, underground game tournament kind of thing. Here, where it's these people are brought into like an alternate reality as they try to figure out a way back, maybe something like that. There's no idea if they're just brought in indiscriminately or for some moral reason or something like that. Who knows? But it's pretty interesting. It has a lot of good action to it. So, yeah, that's been a pretty fun show to watch. The other thing, I've been watching some Christmas stuff. The Muppets Christmas Carol is one of them, particularly because the people at Disney put up the ultimate version of it on theirs finally. The version that most people have been watching for the last like 20, 25 years, or I think it's been out about 30 years at this point, omits a song in the middle of the movie. Where the younger version of Ebenezer Scrooge and his love interest sings a song for like 2 or 3 minutes, whatever. You either get like a truncated version of that or it's cut out entirely. So they finally added the full version to Disney Plus. You have to go to like the extras section to find it for that. But watch that, I was like, yep, that's the same movie I've watched it, you know, most years, and there's a song in there that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
It's a woman just singing about this thing. There's no real fun element to it. But yeah, that's been fun. I also watched the both Home Alones, which are also still fun for that, and kind of just realizing like the cousin is his little brother. Macaulay Culkin's brother, Kieran Culkin. So yeah, that's a fun thing amongst other people that are in there. But yeah, that's been fun times for games. Haven't been playing too much in sort of any amount of time, but have put a good bit of time into Vampire Survivors some more. As that's a game that's real easy to just fuck around and not really make any progress.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really do a good job of telling you like what progress is.
Yeah.
In it. It's just kind of when you see a character, it has like a checklist of stages you could beat. Though, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel like beating when you just get to 30 minutes and then just get destroyed.
Yeah.
By the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
But yeah, I picked up the DLC that came out on Steam. There's a way to get it for, it's like 20% off, I think. It's about $1.60.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the bundle with it, it's $1.43. This is the way Steam bundles work. It's like, I already own the game. So you might get a slight extra discount for the DLC kind of stuff. Some of that, the way those bundles work. I was like, well, I'll pay, you know, 16 cents less for this $2 DLC that adds a map that they show the whole map in the Steam page. And I was like, that's not a map. It looks like a full like game map kind of thing. It's this big, huge above ground area with some underground area stuff. And I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to play this game on this kind of map? Because it's all kind of like seemingly infinite repeating, you know, areas that are all just the same design. It just goes on in every direction infinitely, unless they make like a weird, you know, bridge stage or something like that, where it's just a more vertically oriented map kind of stuff. But yeah, kind of still working my way through unlocking more stuff. But yeah, that's been Vampire Survivors. The other one's Rocket League. They got a holiday event going on with the Winterfest, and this year's thing, as was shown during the Game Awards, is themed or partnered with the lo-fi hip-hop beats to study and chill to sort of account. So they got themed items that you can unlock from around that, and I assume some music stuff as well. So just been playing some more Rocket League and trying to unlock some of that stuff. So yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as far as gaming is concerned, I basically spent the last couple weeks playing Chained Echoes, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. If you have not yet played Chained Echoes, you really need to play Chained Echoes, like as soon as physically possible, because the game is legit amazing. Like, incredibly amazing. It's only been out since early this month, and it's on my top 10 list of the games of this year. And the only reason it's not number one is because Elden Ring also came out this year, and it knocked everything out of the water. But it is... Chained Echoes is a really good example. Another amazing example of how one really, like, determined individual can produce such an amazing piece of gaming if you know, given the tools and the passion for it. And of course, in this case, the primary creator is a German gentleman named Matthias Linda. Now, he didn't do it all by himself. He got some additional help with some of the environmental art from some other people, and he also had somebody else compose the music, but everything else is him, and what he produced is just jaw-dropping in how good it is. A lot of people, when they first play this game, will immediately think of, like, Chrono Trigger, and that's not really, you know, surprising, because a lot of the game plays a lot like Chrono Trigger. But in ways that are more modern and not as clunky as the original Chrono Trigger could be. I don't really want to talk too much about the story because, first of all, the game's world building is incredible. And surprisingly, like, it has kind of a fantasy kitchen sink approach to it, and yet it somehow, it all works extremely well. And it's just so damn good. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that's I'll probably say more about it when we do Day Zero tomorrow. But just needless to say, if you have not played Chained Echoes yet, you need to play Chained Echoes. It's on Steam, pretty cheap, and it's also, like, available for Xbox Game Pass, which is how I'm playing it. It's so well written. It's so well paced. The gameplay is so good, and it's just it's damn near perfect. So if you haven't played it, play it now. Also, on top of that, I started playing a Soccer Story, which of course is the follow-up to Golf Story, which I remember I played, back on the Switch, and that game was a lot of fun. It took, golfing and sort of turned it into kind of a goofy RPG-type game, and Soccer Story is very similar. It's essentially a gameplay-wise, it's a pretty bare-bones sort of soccer game. You and your team, we're kicking the ball around, trying to get it into the goal, the opponent's goal and stuff. But it's the overworld stuff that's like similar to Golf Story that kind of makes the game. Basically, you're playing one of these two twins who live in a town called Soccerton. In this, much like with Golf Story, where it's for some weird reason the entire world revolves around the sport of golf. In this case, it revolves entirely around the sport of soccer. And about a year before the game starts, there was this thing called the Apple Cup, which is like their big sort of local soccer championship. And the game doesn't really tell you what exactly happened, but basically there was a calamity, what they call it. And what it ended up resulting in is that it basically wrecked a huge chunk of the city, and now all soccer has been banned, at least those that is being controlled by Soccer Inc. And basically, you are trying to bring, regular soccer back, but you have to, do things like, you have to use the phrase goal ball instead of soccer, because otherwise you might get in trouble with Soccer Inc. people. It's, like I said, it's very Golf Story-esque. It's a lot of fun. My main issue with it is that it can be kind of esoteric starting out, because you're essentially, instead of like in Golf Story where like you're all right out of the gate, you're going into like playing golf and getting in these tournaments and stuff, this one you kind of have to go and sort of work around trying to find, stuff to get started. Like, you have to recruit people for your team, and they have things that you have to do for them. And it's just, it can be a little bit complicated starting out. But otherwise, it's a lot of fun. So as far as gaming is concerned, that's more or less what I've been doing. Other stuff is concerned, like books. I recently started reading this book by a guy named Kim Newman called Anno Dracula. And Chris, did you ever read the original Dracula?
No.
You didn't? Okay. I'm assuming you've seen many of the Dracula movies at least once.
I've seen some.
Yeah, okay, so you kind of know what the basic story behind Dracula is, right?
Yeah.
He's gotten a stay in Romania, Transylvania, and then he decides he wants to go to Britain, so he sneaks into Britain. The thing is about the original Dracula is that it's written as sort of like an epistolatory novel. So it's largely made up of things like journal entries, diaries, newspaper clippings, written out phonograph recordings of people giving interviews and stuff. So the book kind of tries to sort of immerse you in the world to make it all the more creepier. But the basic idea is eventually, this guy, Abraham Van Helsing, and a friend of him named John Seward, and Jonathan Harker and Quincy Morris all sort of team up when they realize what threat Dracula is, and so they go and they kill him. Well, the idea in Anno Dracula is that doesn't work. Unfortunately, Vlad Tepes, that's his real name, manages to kill Abraham Van Helsing and then slowly finishes off the rest of his allies. And so Dracula in the original book, his whole plan was he wanted to insert himself into British high society and eventually start his own empire. And what the Anno Dracula is like, this is what might happen if he had succeeded. So what happens is he ends up sort of completing Mina Harker's transformation into a vampire. And then he goes out and creates thousands more British vampires. He then marries Queen Victoria and turns her into a vampire. And basically creates like a new vampire aristocracy to rule over the British Empire. He sort of imposes like a police state on people in Britain who have not been turned. He creates like a police force where dissenters can be jailed or impaled without trial. Many of his adversaries that are still what they call warm, that is still unturned, are imprisoned in concentration camps in rural counties. The only two survivors of the of Van Helsing's group are John Seward and Arthur Holmwood, who actually becomes a vampire himself. And he's being groomed to be the next prime minister. And basically what the story more or less revolves around is Kim Newman decides, like, well, this book more or less takes place in the universe of like a classic Victorian popular work of fiction. So why don't I just throw in a bunch of the other popular works of Victoria fiction into the story? So on top of the Dracula characters that are still around, you'll also run into people like Mycroft Holmes, which is, you know, Sherlock Holmes' older brother. One of the main sort of antagonist in the book is Jack the Ripper, who is using a scalpel made out of silver to kill vampire prostitutes. At one point, Fu Manchu shows up. Count Orlok, who, those of you don't know who that is, that was the vampire from Nosferatu. He shows up. He's actually he's the like head warden of the Tower of London. It's legitimately some pretty awesome stuff. Sergeant Dravet, who was like from an old Rudyard Kipling book, is also in the book as well. It's just legitimately like a sort of like a hodgepodge of like a bunch of really, a bunch of Victorian sort of characters and stuff. And it's legitimately pretty fun to read. There's a bunch of other characters that'll show up. Like, yeah, I mentioned Fu Manchu. Sherlock Holmes, yeah, he does show up at this point. Dr. Jekyll is also in it. Moriarty. I think Renfield is also. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely worth reading. It's legitimately a lot of fun. Especially if you're the type of person who likes that type of stuff. But, as far as like, anything else, mostly I'm going to be going over to my grandmother's next week, for a few days to make Christmas cookies and stuff. So I'll be doing a lot of that next week. I'll be home Friday, I guess we're planning like a sort of a final show for December for the new year. So, be paying attention to that. But, as far as, everything else, that's pretty much it. Do you have, anything you want to mention before we move on from here? Chris?
No.
Okay. All right. Well then, with that out of the, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And usually, as is tradition, around this time of year, I like to sort of talk about like all of the sort of unusual Christmas customs that are just everywhere in the Christian world. And in the past, I've talked about things like the Cogener, the weird little Catalonian figure that shows up in nativity scenes, who's usually hiding behind a tree, like taking a dump for some reason. Stuff like the little Christmas dwarves that come and play mischief on various people. Stuff involving Father Christmas. Well, this week I wanted to go back to the English speaking world, and specifically I wanted to sort of revolve around some of my ancestors from Wales. It comes from something that is called wassailing. Now, have you ever heard that term before, Chris, wassailing?
No.
Okay, so originally wassail was a reference to a drink that was usually made around Christmas time. It's a sort of a hot mulled cider, or ale, or wine. It's usually made warm. It's mixed with like pieces of fruit, like apple or orange slices or citrus of some kind. That's stirred around in a bowl, made nice and hot, and it's meant to be like nice and warm. It's one of those like old traditions in the English speaking world that people used to do around Christmas time, or along, like the Christmas pudding or whatever. And at some point in the last couple hundred years, it started to make its way into an overall sort of activity, which is where a group of singers and carolers, maybe with some musicians, will travel from house to house singing Christmas carols, usually in expecting to get some alcohol in return. Usually, ale or beer, some kind of fine spirits, something like that. Kind of like trick-or-treating, but of a very different sort. And in the old days, they used to, get really rowdy. It was not unusual back in, the pre-Victorian era for drunken brawls to start out during these wassailing excursions. But specifically, I wanted to focus on a really just odd little thing that used to happen that my ancestors used to do in Wales, and it's called Merry Lud or Merry Weird. It was a folk custom. It was mostly in South Wales, and basically what it is they would travel around in groups going house to house, and someone in the group would carry around a stick. And on the top of that stick was a horse's skull. That's right, you heard me correctly, a horse's skull that was mounted on the end of the stick. Usually it would have some sort of green baubles or something inserted into the eye holes. It would have a piece of cloth wrapped around the end of it. And they would go door to door. And, in the days leading up to Christmas, would open the door. They would stick this horse skull through the crack in the door and says, "Hey, would you give us some alcohol, or otherwise we're going to let this guy in." Usually it would go through some sort of song. They would go in there and they would knock on the door, and they would sing what was called it's a Welsh word. I think it's called the punkio. Again, Welsh. They would go in and they was like, "May we come in, may we come in, may we drink your spirits." And then the people on the other end inside the house, they would be expected to deny entry, singing another part of the song where they say, "Well, here we come, innocent friends, to ask leave, And eventually, in order to get the people to go away, they would bring out a bowl of a wassailing punch, which, I just mentioned. And so you can imagine people in Wales going around from house to house. And this is actually still a thing that they do in parts of southern Wales, going around and using one of those and trying to poke it through the door, saying, hey, could you give us some alcohol? Exactly where this started, nobody's really sure. They think it has something to do with a traditional commemoration of the flight into Egypt from, you know, the Jesus story where, you know, after Jesus is born, you know, his Mary, you know, his mother Mary and his stepfather, you know, they have to flee into Egypt to flee the massacre of the innocents. And at some point, you know, the horse's skull or some point got involved. But most people think it might have just been a survival of pre-Christian pagan tradition, which a lot of, you know, traditional Christian practices, Christmas practices are pagan in origin. It's also believed that it was meant to be like a symbol of death during like mystery plays. Basically, all anybody really knows now is that this is just the thing people do. Honestly, I wouldn't necessarily mind bringing this custom over here just for the sheer, you know, polarity of it. Can you imagine going to somebody's house and knocking on the door and then sticking this thing in and saying, hey, can you give us your beer? And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Anyway, with that out of the way, it is now start, as always, the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week, or weeks in this case. But first, our first major asshole of the weeks is, of course, Elon Musk, because he has increasingly shown just how unbelievably thin-skinned he is as a human, as a person. I think a lot of people probably already knew that he was banning a bunch of, like, left-wing or left-leaning outlets or journalists that were investigating him. Then he went on stage at one of Dave Chappelle's shows and got roundly booed. And if you watch the footage, he's legitimately shocked at the response, because apparently this guy lives in a bubble and is convinced everybody loves him.
That's rich
and
people.
And then this week, he banned a bunch of journalists and other Twitter accounts that criticized him, and he also banned accounts that were tracking the flights of his private jet, including the Elon Jet account. And this all culminated in him where he then had a Twitter, what's it called? Twitter Share or something like that.
Where it's Spaces. Like
Twitter Spaces, yeah. Where he tried to like discuss the issue, and it became increasingly clear he really had very little idea what he was talking about. So not only did he rage quit the call, he then shut down Twitter Spaces for like the rest of the day. And I mean like all Twitter Spaces, not just that one.
Yeah, because people figured out that even though they were suspended, they could still host a space and get onto that.
Yeah.
That was like a flaw there. It was like, all right, these people managed to get back on to talk about the dangerous moves he was making.
Mm-hmm.
I saw somebody put it together pretty succinctly that it's hilarious that rich people have been insulated all their lives.
Yeah.
Against, you know, criticism and all that.
Uh-huh.
And then they decide to show up on Twitter and find out that they're not shit just because they're rich.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a great thing about Twitter, is that somebody paid $44 billion to be Twitter's main character every day.
Yep.
And for those that don't know, there's an idiom with the internet. It's just, you do not want to be the main character for a day. Don't do anything that would get you that.
Main character every day since he got ownership of Twitter.
Yeah. And that has been his whole thing. And so, yeah, at a certain point, he just started banning a bunch of journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Had written about or tweeted about the Elon Jet account and all that. But he also had Mastodon's Twitter account banned because the person that ran that account also ran the same account for similar account for Bill Gates' jets and Jeff Bezos' account, his jets, which these flight information are publicly available information.
Yeah, and I think people need to like emphasize like flight logs are publicly available information and private aircraft are not exempt from this.
Yeah. That's why there's a point where people were using this information to be like, you know, even like Taylor Swift is using her private jet for these like minor distances instead of, you know, public flights or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a huge waste of, you know, fuel and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And just creating more pollutants in the atmosphere. That all that kind of stuff. But yeah, he banned, you know, people from CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, The Intercept, Aaron Rupar, who posts a lot of videos and quotes and such that people on in the political sphere do, all that kind of stuff. And a bunch of people are just confused why they were suspended. As I think at some point, Elon Musk claimed that, you know, he did so because they are doxing people through this. And it's like, no, they're not. And Elon Musk made a weird claim that his former wife, I guess, Bebe Grimes, and his kid or some ex in one of his kids, that
they one of his kids is actually trans, by the way.
Yeah. Though he still attacks trans people, so cool. But yeah, he claimed that they got somehow tracked through this kind of jet account or whatever, and that this supposedly dangerous person followed them, found their car and started jumping on their hood or anything. And it's like, people have looked and there's no, you know, police report or anything related to this kind of incident. So people are like, did he just make this up to justify these suspensions and all that? And then he started calling it these coordinates assassination coordinates, which is a stupid term for anything. So people are just using that for a euphemism for their location where they're going to be and all that. So yeah, this is a whole thing. And yeah, then he put up a poll, because he likes his polls, for like, how soon should we let these people back on? It was like, now, you know, in a day, in 7 days, or 30 days, or never. And he's like, now was winning. He was like, oh, sorry, too many options, I'll repost a poll kind of thing. And then put up one that was just now or in 7 days. Because, you know, the PR of having an option for never, to let people just decide that bans should be permanent for whatever reason. But now one, and supposedly they should be back. I don't know. I haven't checked. I haven't seen anybody saying they weren't back. So I assume they got their accounts back for all this stuff. Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, like, had any links to Mastodon labeled as like potentially sketchy links, that kind of stuff. And yeah, went after the person that ran the private jet bot account, kind of thing, among others, which I saw somebody, another Twitter bot thing was like, big tech alert. Tweeting here at Elon Musk, parentheses, great person, please do not ban this bot, is now following at JK Rowling. As like a, when notable people follow other notable people, I guess, account. And so it's like, oh, and also he hates bots, but he also likes some bots, and it's, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
He's proof that you don't have to be that rich people can be stupid fucking morons.
Yeah.
Just as much as anybody else.
And he is, his antics have basically, not only have they knocked him out of like you know, being the in the ranking of the richest person in the world, it is tanking his other businesses. Like, have you seen what Tesla stock has been doing over the last few days?
It's been dropping, definitely.
Yeah, like
he's had to sell some for potentially to make loan payments.
Yeah,
for that he's also apparently looking for investors into Twitter. It's like, who would want to put money into this after everything you've done of late? And now that's like, oh, you know, the Twitter HQ in, I think it's San Francisco, they're not paying rent anymore.
Yeah.
They just stopped paying rent. He's fired all the custodian staff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nobody making sure the toilets are clean or anything. And they're apparently people just staying in the office, which then would make that, you know, a landlord situation and all that.
Yeah.
So there's potential liability and stuff for that. So he's just tempting everybody to come after him for many, many things.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm looking forward to when somebody calls him out on it.
Yeah. So
he's like, all right, we'll take you to court for violating, you know, various laws in California and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he's potentially trying to cancel all that supposed, you know, severance pay.
Yeah.
That he's paying a lot of people, finding a weasel way to get out of that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. So then we have the shit that went down in Peru. Now, before I start, I just need to tell you, everybody in this story is an asshole. Everyone. Because the thing you need to know about Peru is that even, because, and yeah, this is in Peru, by the way. Peru is not really a democracy. It has, you know, a functional, you know, a government that functionally looks democratic and, you know, has, you know, runs legislation and stuff like that. But it is very much still living in the shadow of like the Fujimori dictatorship. The last election was literally between one of Fujimori's daughters. So Pedro Castillo, he was the guy who was recently elected to be Peru's president. There was a lot of hope because he was part of a sort of social democratic party, sort of left-leaning. He was like a sort of school teacher, a indigenous school teacher that managed to get elected to the presidency, which in Peru is a really big deal because the indigenous population of Peru has been treated like shit by Peru's government for decades. But there were already some issues when this guy got elected because he was sort of being kind of waffly on some of the major stuff that he was getting elected on. And then by the time he had been in the presidency for a little while, pretty much all of his allies had abandoned him because he seemed to lack any kind of backbone. But there was also another issue, which was Peru's Congress. Peru's Congress is pretty much still largely dominated by center-right and right-wing conservative parties and politicians, basically doing everything they could to stonewall even the smallest bit of legislation that Castillo was trying to get through. So in exasperation, Castillo decided that he's going to dissolve Congress and call for new elections, which is something he could do. But the Congress then decided to vote him out for violating their constitution. And what they did is they used a clause in their constitution that comes from the Fujimori era, where they say a person who is lacking good moral character can be kicked out of their seat, which is one of those things that's just generic enough that you can literally use it to justify anything. Castillo is no longer Peru. He has been ordered by a judge to be detained for 18 months. And right now, Peru is being ruled by an unelected conservative political group, and it's not looking good.
Yeah, his vice president was sworn in,
mm-hmm.
Which makes her the first female leader in their history.
Yep.
So there's that, but yeah. Tried to get rid of Congress, and their Congress said nope.
Nope.
So, yeah, he's being detained for 18 months. He'll remain in custody as, yeah, 14 people died in the process of the nationwide protest, so that's
yep.
not great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the government declared a police state as it struggled to calm the violence that had been particularly fierce in impoverished Indian regions
mm-hmm.
that were the base of support for Castillo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 40 people remain hospitalized
mm-hmm.
For injuries suffered during it, but it seems like most of them should be okay.
Yeah. So that happened. And then, we have a crypto bullshit artist, Sam Bankman-Fried, who has been arrested in the Bahamas, and he has been indicted on federal charges.
Yeah. Apparently lived in the Bahamas.
Yep.
But they're a friend of the U.S., so they had, a federal grand jury indicted Bankman-Fried on 8 criminal counts, ranging from wire fraud to conspiracy to commit money laundering and violating campaign finance laws, according to an indictment unsealed on Tuesday morning. And mm-hmm. so they called in a favor and said, hey, bring that man to us. Arrest him.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yep.
So great news for that. People in Congress were annoyed because he was supposed to be coming in for a hearing. But I think the him getting sent to, you know, deal with this shit in court is probably a more important thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, there you go. Trying to get him to pay back the money he stole from the people that put money into his platform.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure
he
still got some of it, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fuck that guy. Yeah, and then finally, the Trump Organization was found guilty of tax fraud and falsifying business records.
Yeah, this is a great thing. Unfortunately, it took this long to sort of get everything in a row to do this. But yeah, the jury found 2 entities controlled by Trump guilty on 17 counts of criminal tax fraud. Falsifying business records. Maximum penalty is $1.6 million. In a statement, the Trump Organization criticized the verdict and promised to appeal, arguing that blame should fall on the company's executives and not on the firm itself, which seems hilarious.
Yeah.
I believe there's also a bit that there are definitely aspects of this could take Trump down himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it very much points to him being the guy that approved all of this. And hopefully that ends up being the case. And they pull up some charges for him.
Mm-hmm. But fortunately, it wasn't all bad. Some heroes of the last couple of weeks. And we'll go into them now, because it can't all be bad. But first and foremost, New York. State of New York has officially banned pet stores from selling cats, dogs, and rabbits. And we don't have it written, but the reason they're doing is trying to combat puppy mills, essentially.
Yeah, they are barring these stores from selling, new pets, essentially, young pets only. Instead, this takes effect in 2024, lets pet shops work instead with shelters to offer rescued or abandoned animals up for adoption. Also banned breeders from selling more than 9 animals a year.
Mm-hmm.
That is great news, because the puppy mill stuff is
awful. Very disgusting. Legitimately awful.
Yeah.
It's legitimately grotesque.
Yeah.
But yeah, so good on New York for doing that. Next up, we got some friends. We got some brothers and sisters working at Starbucks. The workers at Starbucks, a bunch of Starbucks workers, they are planning a 3-day walkout at 100 stores in a unionization effort. Because as everybody knows, Starbucks has been trying to counter the tide of unionizations that shot through their stores all over the country. And this is going to be one of their first major examples of solidarity.
Yeah. This is taking place this weekend. So started on Friday, going through Sunday. More than 1,000 baristas at 100 stores are planning to walk out, according to Starbucks Workers United. Strike will be the longest in the year-old unionization campaign. Yeah, this is the second major strike in a month by Starbucks U.S. workers. November 17th, workers at 110 Starbucks stores held a one-day walkout. That effort coincided with Starbucks' annual Red Cup Day, when they give out reusable cups to customers who order a holiday drink. Right now, more than 264 of Starbucks' 9,000 company-run U.S. stores have voted to unionize since late last year. So not a ton of them, but still growing.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, Starbucks has definitely put in a lot of work to try to bust these unions up.
Yeah.
Firing people in them. All that kind of stuff that's very much would go against national labor relations laws.
Yeah, so hope that works out. Solidarity. And now, once again, you can now order free COVID-19 tests from the USPS. Yeah, honestly, they should have. Yeah, I was fixing that. Yeah. Thanks to the United States government, you can once again free COVID-19 tests once again from the United States Postal Service.
Yeah. Yeah, they have them back up here, so that's nice.
Honestly, that is a thing they shouldn't have stopped doing in the first place, but
yeah, it was part of funding issues.
Yeah.
For that, so they had to get that sorted out. But yeah, you can order them now. They get shipping starting here on the 19th on Monday, so that'll be good. I got mine ordered in.
Good.
Because you're already paying for them.
Mm-hmm.
Your taxes pay for the USPS to do this kind of stuff, so get your taxpayer, you know, that money worth of this stuff. It's four packs of tests. So yeah, that's good. Definitely get them.
Yeah.
Limit how much you have to pay for these things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so with that out of the way, it is now time for the proper show proper. And to start us off this week, we got good political news because, yes, my senator, Raphael Warnock, won his Georgia runoff to give the Democrats 51 seats in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah. Yeah, a good win. Still close.
Oh, extremely.
For how stupid Herschel Walker is.
Yeah.
But yeah, now they get a true majority.
Yep.
So you'll tell us what happened immediately after to put a thorn in this good news.
Yeah, because pretty much like a couple days after that, Kristen Sinema came forward and announced that she was leaving the Democratic Party to become an independent.
Yeah, Kristen Sinema, favored senator of Arizona that nobody likes because she is very much seems to be somebody who wants attention paid to her. That she has not earned.
Yeah.
She ran on a fairly progressive ticket and then has gone back on almost everything.
Oh, yeah.
Famously, when they had the vote for the $15 minimum wage raise, she did her weird little cutesy thumbs down thing.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't have to be a fucking asshole about it.
Yeah. Seriously.
But yeah, she announced that she is leaving the Democratic Party to register as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
saying I've registered as an Arizona independent. I know some people might be a little surprised by this, but actually I think it makes a lot of sense. I've never fit neatly into any party box. I've never really tried. I don't want to remove myself from the partisan structure. Not only is it true to who I am and how I operate, I also think it'll provide a place of belonging for many folks across the state and the country who are also tired of the partisanship. But I think this move is more about making sure that she cannot be primaried in the next election when her time comes up.
Yeah.
Because I think they'd have I think she has a couple of people in Arizona that would very much like to unseat her.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ruben Gallego. She'll be up in 2024. So that's one of the people that they are floating that could take her out, but as an independent, she only have to run against other independents in the primary. So then she gets to survive until the full election.
Yeah.
And then she'll see why Arizona doesn't like her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has not done much of consequence that should give people in Arizona any reason to think she has their interests in mind.
Yeah.
Like they wildly voted for Mark Kelly.
Yeah.
To put him back into office this past this year. So yeah, she can go fuck off with this attention seeking announcement. Or she's basically just going to be, you know, a Republican without being a Republican.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the lead will go kind of like a 50.5, essentially. Yeah. But either way, the Dems still have the majority.
Yeah. But anyway, in other news, Congress voted to remove the bust of the Chief Justice that upheld slavery from the U.S. Capitol. I have a feeling I know which one it is, but go ahead.
Yeah, this is the bust of Roger Taney.
Yep.
The Supreme Court justice who wrote the Dred Scott decision in the Capitol. They're going to replace him with Thurgood Marshall, the first black person to serve on the high court.
Yep.
Which is a good decision. Yeah, the notorious 1857 Dred Scott decision upheld slavery and established that black people were not U.S. citizens. But yeah, this legislation, which passed Wednesday, now heads to President Biden's desk, says the bust is unsuitable for the honor of display to many to the many visitors of the Capitol. Since at the entrance of the old Supreme Court chamber in the Capitol, where the Supreme Court met from 1810 to 1860, Taney was the fifth Chief Justice, led the court from 1836 to 1864. So yeah, good riddance to this statue. I'm sure it's not the only statue there that they have that's very much out of place.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah. And let's see. Next up, drug maker is seeking FDA approval to sell over-the-counter overdose reversal nasal spray.
Yeah, if you've seen stuff about this, I think last week tonight has had a bit about these things that basically firefighters talk about.
Yeah.
I forget what the version that they have is called, but that's probably their, yeah, naloxone is this miracle drug that kind of helps reverse overdosing. And there are firefighters around the country where that's their most used thing versus, you know, axes or hoses or any of that stuff. They get called into helping out with that stuff all the time. Be I hear drug maker Emergent BioSolutions seeking approval from the FDA to sell Narcan over the counter without need for a prescription. It's an easy to use nasal spray version of the drug naloxone. It has a strong track record reversing deadly opioid overdoses, which have soared in recent years, largely because of the spread of fentanyl.
Yep.
And yeah, this would be something that would be good to have, especially
if
it's a reasonably priced thing.
Absolutely. But yeah. So that's hope. I hope that actually goes through. We especially need something like that down here because opioid shit is bad. And then we got this story, which is honestly really exciting. It's still kind of, we're still kind of a ways from being able to take something like this and, you know, make it like commercially viable to the point that it could become like a primary thing. But this week, scientists in the lab actually managed to produce more energy via fusion than it put in, which is, that's basically been like the holy grail for decades.
Yeah.
As far as like nuclear fusion is concerned.
Yeah. This is a first. Let's see. Is at the National Ignition Facility.
Mm-hmm.
A $3.5 billion laser complex at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California.
Yep.
They've been working on this for more than a decade.
Yeah. They've
struggled to meet its stated goal of producing a fusion reaction that generates more energy than it consumes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the total power output of this test was around 150% of the power that was put in by 192 laser beams.
Yep.
Yeah, that happened about 1 a.m. local time on December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers used the lasers to zap a tiny pellet of hydrogen fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Lasers put out 2.05 megajoules of energy, and the pellet released roughly 3.15 megajoules.
Yeah, but yeah, that... This is this is legit an amazing discovery. Because this is like we've said, this is as far back as like the days when people were trying to do like cold fusion and shit. This has been like the holy grail of trying to find a way where you can get something that in nuclear fusion that can safely, you know, put a little bit of energy in and then get a lot of energy out of it. And they did it. They finally managed to do it.
Yeah, though this is still not something usable in a wider sense.
We're still like 20, 30 years away from this becoming a big something that we could use regularly. But
yeah,
that alone is like, it's like it can be done. It's not theoretical anymore. So yeah, that's awesome. All right. So next up after that, so former President Donald Trump was making this, he was hyping up like this huge announcement that he was going to make this week. And there was a lot of like talk of like what he was going to do. It's like, is he going to announce his potential running mate for when he, you know, cause he's already, we know he's running for president again. You know, is he going to announce like people who are going to be in his staff or anything like that? No, it turns out he was selling $99 a piece NFT Trump trading cards.
Yeah, and I think they are selling them now, and people have gotten to look at them and seeing like, oh, these might be ripped off.
Yeah.
Various bits of dumb Trump art out there, stuff that's used for even for like shirts and such.
I'm pretty sure a lot of the shit was AI generated too.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, they're $99 each plus a transaction fee. They say they have about 45,000 digital trading cards. They'll be creating the initial series. And apparently you get, if you buy any of these, you get a potential entry for a sweepstakes that could include like a meet and greet with Trump. Maybe a Zoom call or, you know, play golf at one of his courses, that kind of stuff. And like the fine print is like, you know, you have to pay for, you know, your travel and hotel expenses and all this shit, for that. And it's like, yeah, that seems about right. Where it's like, just keeping the grift going as much as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he claimed like, oh, a superhero's coming and then, the main one they've shown is like him with like a Trump superhero outfit under his jackets where he's like suddenly Superman ripped kind of thing where it's like, yeah, that's not realistic at all.
Nope.
A lot of stuff like that. So it's kind of a thing that this is what he's hyping up in a lot of his biggest followers are like stunned by this news. Mm-hmm. That this is what, because I think I saw Scott Adams, who did the Dilbert comics, mm-hmm. was like, well, he already announced he's running, so maybe the superheroes that he's announcing his running mate, and what if it's Carrie Lake, mm-hmm. kind of shit. And it's like, oh my god. And you show like what it really is, and it's like, yeah, you guys are way off with this shit. Mm-hmm. Is there just more ways for him to make money off of this shit? And it's mm-hmm. the perfect time to get into NFTs. Mm. As you know, Sam Bankman-Fried is getting arrested over big fraud stuff there. And the video for it is hilarious because he's talking about this stuff mm-hmm. that he has no idea himself what any of this is. Mm-hmm. He's just been told it's easy money to make. Mm-hmm. He's not like, oh, you get a meet and greet with me. And that's great. I guess it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, the way he like talks bullshit about things, how great they are. Mm-hmm. He was like downplaying the meet and greet with himself and all that. Mm-hmm. But when it was like comes to his like his golf clubs, he's like, oh yeah, those are great. You know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's a whole big grift. Hilarious.
Unfortunately they appear like crazy.
Yeah.
Because fucking hell. But next up, 25 more movies have been added to the National Film Registry. And we'll go ahead, because we got the list here, and we'll go ahead and sort of go through them.
Yeah.
Okay, so first is Mardi Gras Carnival from 1898. It's one of the early sort of films that were made at the very dawn of the film medium. Cab Calloway Home Movies, which are some home recorded films that the famous singer Cab Calloway recorded between 1948 and 1951.
Yeah.
Cyrano de Bergerac, which is the film version of a famous play that was made in 1950. Charade, which is from 1963. Scorpio Rising, also 1963. Behind Every Good Man, 1967. Titty Cut Follies, 1967 as well. Now, that one's actually significant because Titty Cut Follies is a documentary that was made about the conditions of a mental asylum. And it inadvertently sort of showed the really bad conditions that people who were mentally ill were being treated with. And it was like actually like the asylum that they filmed at like tried a bunch of legal maneuvers to make sure the film never got any kind of commercial release. So, you know, that's kind of neat. Mingus, 1968. Manzanar, 1971. Betty Tells Her Story, 1972. Superfly, 1972. That's, of course, the famous crime film has the famous soundtrack by Curtis Mayfield. Attica, 1974. That, of course, is a film about the Attica prison riot. Carrie, 1976. That, of course, is the very famous film based on Stephen King's debut novel that made him a literary superstar.
Yeah.
Union Maids, 1976. Word Is Out, Stories of Our Lives, that's from 1977. Bush Mama, 1979. The Ballad of Gregorio Cortez, 1982. Itam Hakim Hapit, 1984. Hairspray, 1988. That, of course, is a John Waters movie that became the inspiration for a very popular musical that was also turned into another film that famously has John Travolta in drag. The Little Mermaid, 1989. That, of course, is the film that started the Disney Renaissance after, you know, quite a few years where they had basically were, like, lingering in just awful shit. Tongues Untied, 1989. When Harry Met Sally, 1989. That, of course, is the famous comedy. House Party, 1990. I believe that's the one that features Kid and Play.
Yeah. Yeah, the first of those.
Mm-hmm. Iron Man 2008. That, of course, is the movie a lot of people sort of credit with. It wasn't the first film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's generally the one that was like a critical and commercial success that sort of kickstarted it.
First one that Marvel made themselves. Yeah.
And Pariah, 2011. So,
yeah,
those are the films that have been entered into the registry, and they had a pretty good selection, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, not too much in the way of recent stuff. Only two here that are after 1990.
Yeah. And as you probably figured out by now, we're thoroughly into the entertainment portion of the show. And first, to start that off, is Netflix landed the live-action My Hero Academia movie.
Yeah. This is being... let's see. Yeah, the director is Shinsuke Sato, who directed the Alice in Borderland series for Netflix. So, makes sense that Netflix would be the one getting this.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be his English language debut. He'll be directing from a screenplay by Joby Harold, who worked on Obi-Wan Kenobi and Army of the Dead. But yeah, adapted from My Hero Academia, a globally popular manga and anime.
Yep.
That is basically like, what if X-Men was more of a formal, you know, academy kind of thing? Versus like a, you know, shadowy academy for parents to send their kids off that are showing mutant powers.
Yeah.
We want them to be, you know, trained and have like a normal life. That kind of thing. But yeah, it's very much anime with, you know, Deku being the main character who's sort of in, born without a quirk, but manages to run into All Might, the greatest hero in the world.
Yeah.
Who starts the process of like transferring his power over to him. So that he gets to live his dream.
Yep.
And, you know, learns how to use that power effectively over time while dealing with, you know, all the weird situations that come with that.
Yep.
As they start getting into doing stuff in the open world and all that. So, yeah, there you go. They'll probably take a few years to get that done, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it should work pretty well. Since superhero movies are some of the biggest ones in the world.
Yeah. But let's see. And Netflix is Old Enough is actually getting a second season on January 1st. Now, for those who don't know, Old Enough is like an unscripted reality show in Japan that's been going on for, I think, some 30 years now. And basically what it is they give like a young kid like a grown-up task to do, like, you know, make dinner or go do an errand in town. And
it's often the parents sort of giving their kid their first big task to go do, like go to the store here and get some stuff they need for dinner, or take this watch to the person that works on them to, you know, get that fixed, or maybe go find, you know, the other parent to bring their lunch to them, that kind of stuff. And you're dealing with, you know, the kids sort of sometimes doing really well in, you know, figuring out what they need to do. Others having trouble with that and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
it's a fun, cute little show.
Yeah, relatively adorable.
Because it's a thing that doesn't really happen so much here in the U.S., but in Japan.
Well, yeah,
it's pretty much common because there's, you know, a lot more small towns and not as much vehicular traffic there.
Yeah, and also just in general, you know, crime rate is much lower. So,
yeah, it's been going on for about 30 years, but they are doing a second season, and they are including in part of this. There's 20 episodes for the first season. They're doing 10 for the second season that will start January 1st. And they've said they're adding a segment to it called After Years, which will tell more about the child who went on the errand and where they are today. Just like follow-up segments that people wanted the show to do. at a certain point. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to.
Next up, Ash Ketchum is officially going off into the sunset and will no longer be in the Pokemon anime starring with the next season. Which makes sense because he finally achieved his dream.
Yeah, now he gets to retire at the ripe old age of 14.
Yeah.
Whatever age he is in. So yeah, they are finally moving on to some new protagonists, Liko and Roy, who are starting their descent into the Scarlet and Violet generation.
Yeah.
So I guess it's going to be called Pokemon Ultimate Journeys, the series. Or no, that's the current one. The next one will be, let's see, its current season is wrapping with 11 special episodes beginning on January 13th. To celebrate Ash's long journey. Then, yeah, once that is over, they'll move over to the next show. Do they have a name here? Well, the stuff is going to be on Netflix in the U.S. Okay, they just call it the new series. They'll probably reveal a name for it, but
yeah,
it'll feature the starter Pokemon for the new game. Sprigatito, Fuecoco, and Quaxly.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have dual protagonists
for
the first time. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's more or less the end for Ash Ketchum. Although, I won't be surprised if there's like a Pokemon movie line where they decide to bring him back, if just as a cameo. Yeah. So then we got some news from HBO Max. They have pulled both Westworld and The Nevers in its latest batch of removals.
Yep. They are continuing to do this crap.
Yeah. There's just something really shitty about a company that can, like, you, a bunch of people put in all that work and a company can just take it away like that.
Yeah, that happens when you are the new WB Discovery that is focused on getting rid of all this debt.
Yeah.
That HBO Max had, which is, you know, pulling these shows so they don't have to pay residuals or any of that stuff. Extra, potentially they might like sell their rights to one of the other streaming services to bring in money that way. But it's also like, why are you doing that with your series that, especially these ones are like originals that were made for HBO or HBO Max. And it's like, what's the point of that, you know, harming your own platform to save some money?
Right.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, like other things have been removed. Minx, which was renewed for a season two, so it seems like it's either canceled or they're hoping somebody else picks it up. Love Life, which had not been picked up for season three, but yeah, it's like, think of the shits Netflix would get if they, you know, they canceled the Cowboy Bebop for a season two and like just pulled those episodes. That would be even worse, because there are plenty of people that enjoyed it. It's like, what's the reason for pulling it? And it's like, not really much if you're trying to sell people on this catalog here. But HBO Max has kind of had that issue for a long time now, where like the Last Week Tonight does not have the full run of that on there.
Yeah.
It is the past year's worth of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So like the only way you can get all those episodes is to essentially just buy it off of, I think, Amazon. Amazon Video.
Yeah.
For that. So it's like,
yeah,
just more of them trying to find places to cut money.
Yeah.
And it's like, what series are you going to have left? Just because the back catalog is like the most important part of these services.
Well, then we're moving on to Henry Cavill. Unfortunately, as everyone knows, he's returning for the next season of The Witcher. And then we found out he's not going to be in the next Superman movie either, as James Gunn is currently working on a new Superman film. And, I mean, there's been, like, some noise being made that Gunn may jettison the entire Snyderverse entirely.
Yeah, they've essentially said Wonder Woman's done, Aquaman's done, Superman's done, essentially.
Yeah.
The Batman will probably be the Batman, but obviously, what's-his-face is not returning Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might end up with, like, the only remnants of that being the Flash movie that they somehow keep trying to push forward despite everything going on with that movie.
Yeah. Not Ezra including Miller. The antics of its star.
Yeah. Ezra Miller just having a series of events going on that suggest that they should just shelve that movie, but they still keep pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were going to have a Henry Cavill cameo in there and a Ben Affleck cameo in there. And it's like, why? Why not just cancel this thing? Because it's had a lot of trouble for years.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be done like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They still keep going, but getting James Gunn and Peter Safran in there seems like a great opportunity to actually wipe the slate clean for the stuff that wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And get, you know, people in there who know what they're doing and get that going. So unfortunately, it comes at the expense of Henry Cavill here.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be down for long.
Yeah. Don't cry for Henry Cavill. He's actually going to be he's been signed by Amazon to a new Warhammer 40K project. So
yeah. Yeah, no idea if this is going to be a series or what, but it might very well be a series.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he has one of his big nerd projects of late has been painting miniatures for Warhammer 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's spent hours a day doing that stuff. Which, you know, he can do when he's incredibly rich and has a lot of free time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's,
'cause that is an expensive hobby, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's like when the pandemic was going on, he was like, hey, I'm going to build a PC. How do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can afford to pay the premium and all those components and all that. So, he won't be down for too long.
Uh-huh.
He's also going to be, I think, executive producer on this series as well. So,
yeah. That's going to be interesting to as a film project to do, because the thing about the 40K universe is that basically everybody in there is shit. Like, everyone. The Imperium is terrible. The people they are up against is worse. Even the one sort of quote-unquote good guy aliens, which is how Empire, are kind of into brainwashing. Like,
yeah.
And unfortunately, because of that, it means they... not insignificant portion of the fandom that is really into Nazis. So,
yeah, that's a big part of the sci-fi universe is when you take, you know, your influence from Nazis. It's like Star Wars has that, because that's the entirety of the Empire's identity is Nazis.
Yeah.
And Warhammer has its own issues. Like, one of the factions literally just flies around space in a big flying church.
Yep.
That's basically their whole thing. They're the religious faction, and they just say, like, hey, what if our spaceship is just a church?
What if it's just a cathedral up with rockets? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting what they come up with that one. Anyway, we got some trailers here now. We got Netflix's Kaleidoscope.
Yeah, this is an interesting series, and you get none of that from this trailer. That this is supposed to be a series that you can kind of have some decision-making to it.
Yeah.
As well as supposedly you can watch this in the episodes in any order and it still works. I don't know how that works. But there's another like trailer related to this where it's a little more behind the scenes kind of stuff to it. But yeah, this has Giancarlo Esposito, Paz Vega, and Tati Gabriel in this. Mm-hmm. It'll be out January 1st. Series about, a master thief and his crew attempt an epic and elaborate heist worth $7 billion.
Mm-hmm.
A betrayal, greed, and other threats undermine their plans. And it looks pretty neat for what it is. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm. Yeah.
That seems like I'm taking some big chances for how you can get through a series like this and make some potential choices and whatnot. And somehow make it still work.
Yeah. We also got a trailer for Hulu's Extraordinary.
Yeah, Extraordinary. It's a new series. Starts January 25th. I think they're doing weekly releases on that. But stars a character named Jen, lives in a world where everyone has a superpower, but she does not.
Yeah.
So it's one of those kind of stories, but somewhere between a sitcom and an existential crisis. So she's dealing with her life as an ordinary person in an extraordinary world kind of thing. The trailer looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Just to see how that goes, because there's Hulu seems like the platform, the weird platform where there's a lot of quality stuff, but you never hear people talk about much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly just like, you know, some of their big stuff, but not much of late. I think I've heard people talking about anything on there.
Yeah. And we also got an official trailer for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is, of course, the sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, and this is the one where they're kind of doing two movies back-to-back, essentially, with this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next one's maybe 2024 at some point, but this is out in June 2023. But yeah, Miles Morales returns, hanging out with his buddy Gwen Stacy as they go back into the multiverse, though they encounter a bunch of spider people in there. Mm-hmm. And you can, if you look in there, you can see the one from the game, from the Insomniac game, is also in there somewhere. But they're dealing with potential clashing of heroes and such. I think that involves like Spider-Man 2099.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's gonna be an interesting one to see how this turns out. But yeah, the Lord and Christopher Miller working on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to it.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
And finally, last but not least, we got a TV trailer for Barbie, the movie that has sort of inadvertently become a meme factory over the last year. Now it looks like it's actually coming out.
Yeah, and this first trailer is basically them kind of spoofing the beginning of 2001, Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've seen people put these two trailers sort of side by side. You can see like, it's like an exact copy, except instead of having the monkeys dealing with the monolith, it's these girls dealing with, you know, before Barbies are mostly dolls were just like babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so being like, well, here's these girls playing with baby dolls, and then instead of the monolith, it's the big Barbie, played by what's her face?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
Margot Robbie.
Yeah, it's just her there, and you're like, the girls are like, fuck these dolls, and like throwing them away like the monkeys would with their big bones they're smashing skulls with. For some reason, it goes to like select like little clips of other stuff going on in this, and you see like Ken doing some weird shit. And people are like, "Oh, here's the new Fortnite drop."
Mm-hmm.
Skins, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's out July 21st. Mm-hmm. It seems like it could be a surprising movie.
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah. It could be, you know, the Lego movie again, where they took a corporate property and somehow managed to give it a meaningful, undertone to it. But So that will be our show for tonight. I'm guessing the idea is next week we're going on Christmas Eve. We're going to do like one live show to sort of send the year off. And then we'll be back after January 1st, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be the week after that.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. So if all goes as well, you'll next week. So join us then. In the meantime, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got a link for you in the show notes. Also, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at places like Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, Archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. Also, come visit the SmashPad website if you have not yet. We are sort of in the process of bringing some new projects and some new segments and articles, and we're also sort of in the process of updating the website itself because it's kind of needed it for a little while. But until then, join us next week. Hopefully, if it all goes as planned, we'll be sending 2022 off with a bang in our own special way. But we're going to go ahead and wind it all down. And wishing you and yours and everybody out there have a nice, safe, happy holidays. And happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all of that. And we'll see you next week.